Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're embarking on a truly fascinating journey. We've got a compelling piece of writing in front of us, one that uses recent global health challenges as, well, a springboard to explore some really profound truths about our well-being. It's a stack of insights that, you know, invite us to rethink our health, our habits, maybe even our place in the world.
Yeah, this source goes well beyond just physical health. It really delves into the intricate connections between our bodies, minds, emotions, even our energetic fields. It's a deeply holistic perspective. You know, it challenges us to look beyond the immediate stuff and consider the fundamental rules of life.
Absolutely. So our mission for this deep dive is to unpack how individual stress and collective stress impacts us, and then explore some concrete strategies for strengthening our innate self-regulation, finding our way back to a sense of balance. What's really remarkable here is how the author weaves together what might seem like very different ideas, you know, traditional healing, modern neuroscience, into one sort of cohesive framework. Okay, let's start unwrapping it all. So our source begins by framing the recent global health crisis not just as a health challenge, but as a real catalyst. Like it's shown a light on deeper societal vulnerabilities.
Right.
It suggests that even as restrictions eased and things felt more normal, we really need to consider how previous imbalances maybe contributed to the whole situation.
And a key point the author makes is the assertion that many measures like isolation, social restrictions, they might have actually weakened us, maybe even in lasting ways. The text flags this concern that media and politicians might have, well, fueled fear rather than thinking about how that fear itself, how anxieties could actually undermine our body's own defense systems, our regulation.
Yeah. And it raises critical questions, too, about what it calls not always comprehensible statistics and restrictions. The uncertainty around, say, vaccine efficacy, side effects, the suppression of critical opinions, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? If these external things weakened our defense and regulation forces, what does that really mean for our well-being, both individually and, you know, together?
And zooming out a bit, the author suggests that how we interact with the world, exploiting nature, experiments, this excessive, maybe egoistic lifestyle, that likely shares some responsibility for these kinds of global challenges emerging in the first place. It really sets the stage for a much broader discussion, not just our health, but the planet's health, too.
Now, the author is an orthopedic practitioner, and they introduced this concept called integral orthopedics. That term alone makes you curious. What exactly is it? How does that orthopedic background feed into this, well, bigger picture?
Right.
At its heart, integral orthopedics explores the link between muscle tension, specifically something called persistent pelvic torsion, and how that relates to our vegetative nervous system, our fascia, even the brain. The author apparently saw this early on in their practice. This kind of tension often signals a deep stress mode in the vegetative system, so it's about finding a more root cause approach to supporting health.
And from that came something called fascia integration therapy, or FIT. How does fascia work? And what kind of older practices does it draw on?
Well, FIT is presented as both a self-help thing and, for therapists, a more causal, maybe more sustainable approach. It uses the navel, which the source says is like the center of our fascial system, to address both internal and external stress. The aim is to reactivate the body's own relaxation and regulation capabilities.
You know, what really grabbed me here is how the author connects this modern fascia idea to some, well, pretty surprising historical insights. Traditional stuff, or some of those.
It's quite striking, actually. Like, neural therapists back in the last century, they used injections at interference fields, areas like old scars, even the navel itself, to influence the vegetative nervous system.
Wow.
And then you look globally, traditional Chinese medicine calls the navel area the sea of energy, qi, vital life force. Japanese healing knows it as the hara, where qi is harmonized through breathing, meditation.
Oh, yeah.
And now modern fascia research is actually rediscovering things like meridians, those energy paths, as fascial connections, and the navel as a central fascial hub. So this idea, this holistic connection through the navel and fascia, it's deeply rooted, not just like some new idea.
Okay, so we've touched on the broad impacts of stress, but the author really drills down into how our bodies are meant to self-regulate. They identify four crucial systems. Let's start with one people might think of first, our vegetative nervous system.
Yeah, our overall health really hangs on our ability to regulate, you know, between tension and relaxation.
Yeah.
Without disturbance. The vegetative or autonomous nervous system, it works mostly unconsciously, handling vital functions. It's got two main branches, sympathetic for action, mobilization.
Fight or flight.
Right. And the parasympathetic or vagus nerve, which handles recovery, regeneration, rest and digest. Now, if stress hormones from chronic overload or fear don't get used up or processed, this delicate system loses its ability to regulate properly. It really makes you think, how does our modern fast-paced life impact this ancient system?
Okay, next up, the fascia system. You hear it called the second brain sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
What's its role in this whole balance?
Fascia is just incredible. It's this three-dimensional web that wraps around and connects everything. Organs, muscles, joints, nerves, vessels, everything. It acts as our most sensitive perception organ, an information highway. And the fluid-filled space within it, the interstitial space or matrix, that's like a communication system for all our cells. When we get stressed, fascia can get sticky, thicken up. And here's a really interesting bit. It has crystalline properties, like a liquid crystal display, constantly changing, interacting with energy. It acts as a transmitter and receiver, generating and reacting to subtle electromagnetic waves in the body.
Wow, okay.
And it plays a huge role in communicating, even storing emotions,
yeah.
Joy, sorrow, anger, stress. It's all in there. So it's not just wrapping paper, it's dynamic, it's communication, it's even emotional memory.
And this leads us right to the idea of the aura, doesn't it? The link between fascia and our energy field.
Exactly. Fascia seems to have this really close relationship with our outer energy field, what some call outer ki, or the aura. Both the fascia and the aura react to stress and emotions, and they can apparently store them. The source points out that treating traumatized fascia or releasing tension in the aura can lead to really deep full body relaxation and the release of old suppressed emotions. It really drives home this idea that our unconscious isn't just in the brain. It's in the fascia, it's in the aura, all connected through that vegetative nervous system.
That suggests our communication is way more than just words or, you know, facial expressions.
Absolutely. The author notes that losing that unconscious communication, things like facial expressions, handshakes, hugs, that was one of the really impactful restrictions during the pandemic. The source even states that a lack of physical contact can lower immune strength, maybe even our will to live. It emphasizes that we really thrive on this exchange of subtle vibrations, mostly unconscious.
Okay, finally, let's bring in the brain. How does it fit into this holistic view, and how does stress affect its function within this whole picture?
Well, our brain is constantly translating information into signal vibrations, processing it consciously and unconsciously. The unconscious programs in the brainstem, limbic system, handling instincts, feelings, they're faster, more efficient, save energy. Conscious programs in the neocortex let us think logically, but they need more energy. Now, under prolonged stress, the brain tends to switch to autopilot. We become more susceptible to those unconscious patterns. But the good news, according to the source, is that by relieving stress on the vegetative system, moving our bodies, quieting the mind, we can reopen access to conscious thought and even what the author calls superconscious sources, inspiration, creativity.
So if our body and mind are this complex vibrational orchestra, what happens when that symphony gets disturbed, that the source really spills out the widespread effects of chronic stress?
Yeah, when persistent, excessive stress, individual, communal, collective becomes a stressor in itself, it really takes a toll. It weakens the immune system, organ function, the brain, fascia, cell metabolism, repair processes, you name it. The body just can't regenerate properly. And that leads to this cascade: less joy, lower performance, feeling emotionally flat, less creativity, more tension, pain, irritability, depression, sleep problems. The list goes on.
Oh.
And it's all because the brain, the vegetative nervous system, and the fascia are so deeply intertwined. Our body sends out alarm signals, you know, trying to compensate. But if we ignore them, eventually things derail. We get sick.
What are some specific individual sources of stress the text points to? Things that feed into this cascade?
Well, beyond just general overload, the source really highlights fascial and emotional stress. This includes what it calls interference fields, basically, traumatized tissue, scars, diseased organs, blocked joints. They act like static, disrupting the body's natural self-regulation.
Okay.
And also suppressed emotions. Because they're so connected to the nervous and fascial systems, their disharmonious vibrational pattern can cause illness. Holding back emotions literally consumes energy. It blocks healthy emotional flow, especially what the author calls the flow of love.
You know, it's quite compelling how the text also goes into disruptive unconscious behavioral patterns.
Yes. It highlights how unconscious programs like inherited burdens, maybe guilt from a grandparent's war experience, or loyalty to parents, maybe showing up as self-sabotage or addiction, or just family patterns, these can influence how we feel and act without us even realizing it.
Right.
The key, the author says, is bringing the light of our consciousness into the basement of our unconscious. And that's where mindfulness, presence, becomes so crucial to break free from those old patterns, because our conscious mind tends to check out, lose presence when those unconscious thoughts take over.
Shifting to the societal level, how does stress show up there, especially thinking about something like the pandemic?
The source notes that external stressors, work overload, private life overload, worries, unexpressed emotions, less physical contact, fear-mongering, all that got amplified during the recent crisis. While our conscious minds were busy with stats and masks, this deep tension was spreading unconsciously in our bodies and across society. And when those unconscious tensions get too big to handle, society can react with, well, confusion or regulatory rigidity.
Huh. Which makes you ask that critical question. Are we letting fear-based or economic circuits just take over our decision-making as a society?
Exactly.
So, stepping back, what does this all mean for how society could maybe cope better?
The text suggests we can push back against that confusion and powerlessness by raising awareness of destructive elements, things like carelessness about other people, resources, the climate, or, you know, the entanglement of things like the arms industry with maintaining our prosperity. It proposes preventative measures like untangling the links between economy, politics, media, and setting clear goals for more equitable distribution, preserving the world for the future.
Okay, so the deep dive then shifts gears a bit to what the author calls the rules of life, practical guidance for harmony inside and out. Where do we start with that?
It starts with our thoughts, their impact. It's fascinating. The author points out that intensely imagining something, a vacation, success, even intimacy, can affect our body and psyche more strongly than a real experience we just sleepwalk through. Yeah, our perspective, our interpretation, can literally influence reality, positively or negatively, spreading like ripples. So the more consciously you observe your thoughts and the feelings they create, the clearer your connection to reality becomes, and the stronger your ability to influence it in a good way.
Okay, so if thoughts have that much power, how do we get out of negative loops, like that sulking and complaining mode the author mentions?
The source uses this analogy of the brain as a computer that can derail under stress. It jumps back to old stress programs like self-pity, the solution, shut down all programs. Basically, stop thinking or acting destructively. Withdraw from the pattern.
Easier said than done sometimes.
Absolutely. But the next step is crucial. Activate the observer and mindfulness mode. Which raises that question, can we really choose our mental state like flipping a switch?
So what are some concrete steps the author suggests for making that shift? How do we actually do it?
Well, the simplest way to clear out that constipation in your system, as the author puts it, is physical activity, ideally in nature.
Get moving.
Exactly. If that's not possible, engage proven build-up programs like conscious breathing. There's a specific pattern mentioned. 7-2-7-2. Breathe up the spine for 7 counts. Pause for 2. Breathe down the front for 7. Pause in the pelvis for 2.
Okay.
Another method is switching to perception mode. Actively feeling your body, your contact with the earth, or just consciously looking for beauty, finding things to be grateful for in your surroundings. Detailed instructions are in the book, apparently.
And once you start doing that, how do you get onto that upward spiral? Good mood, fresh energy.
Well, once you become a more attentive observer and you regularly practice these kinds of exercises, you naturally start deactivating the confusion in your system. Your consciousness gets freer. You start recognizing the wonders of life more easily. That, plus the right kind of physical and psychological movement, leads towards better health, an attitude of gratitude. You start feeling the sun behind the clouds even when things are tough.
Mm-hmm.
And your own harmonizing vibrations spread out and they come back to you as gratitude, recognition, manifesting as creativity, effectiveness.
And this idea of positive vibrations, it's not just about thoughts, is it?
No, definitely not. The source really emphasizes choosing the vibrations you expose yourself to. It notes, for instance, that even food made with love can't fully counteract, say, toxic vegetables or meat from tortured animals.
Right.
And while technology can sometimes dull our senses, nature's elements can cleanse and strengthen us. A shower, touching the earth, fresh air, sounds, rhythms. They can help us tune into the universe's melody. The author even brings up erotic vibrational capacity as a potentially enriching gift, a path to love and unity if approached holistically.
The source also has a really interesting take on suffering, how we experience it.
Yeah, the core idea is that suffering mostly happens on the timeline, past or future. So it helps to distinguish, is this actual current suffering? Or is it remembered suffering or feared future suffering?
Oh.
Because those last two rarely help. They usually just make things worse. By focusing on the present moment, you reduce stress hormones, you have more energy to actually integrate the suffering you're experiencing, and you gain more freedom of choice, more agency. It allows for a calmer approach to what's inevitable and maybe easier access to inner and outer strength.
Another crucial rule, recognizing our limits. How does that play out day to day?
It's basically about learning not to push past your own limits or others, taking breaks, making sure there's enough variety in what you do, consciously recharging your energy, whether that's alone or with others, doing things like the FIT exercises, yoga, Pilates, creative stuff, sports, finding pleasant spaces, being in nature, using silence or music, whatever works for you.
And if you're constantly overdoing it,
then the text urges you to look deeper. Look for the reasons in that basement of your inner patterns, those unconscious drivers.
The pandemic really threw another rule of life into sharp relief, didn't it? How we share with each other, especially in close relationships.
Absolutely. The author points to the huge jump in divorce rates during that time as a stark sign of the size of the shadow couples often face, especially if they really believe in love. Often, both partners are projecting unresolved stuff onto each other.
Yeah, that happens.
But the message is hopeful. The choice to break that cycle is always there. When emotions, worries, problems, ours or others, need to be seen, shared, maybe calmed, giving them space is key.
So how do we strengthen each other instead of, you know, weakening each other with criticism?
Healthy togetherness, especially when things are stressful, really needs acknowledgement. Seeing each other's efforts, strength. Instead of jumping to criticism, the source says, take time to feel, communicate, listen, appreciate. There's a beautiful analogy. A knot doesn't open if you pull both ends tighter.
Right.
It opens when you trace the strands back to where they're free, really see the entanglement, and then give it space and mindfulness to carefully resolve.
This deep dive really ends on quite a powerful spiritual note, doesn't it?
It does. It's profound how the source defines suffering energetically. Disharmony of our vibrations beyond the comfort zone.
Mm.
And it encourages not blaming God, but seeing God as love, a presence that's there even in suffering, gently holding us when we fall. Suffering, from this perspective, can actually free us from ego, open us up to higher vibrational levels.
Mm.
And while the author admits we can't explain all suffering, the focus is on trying to alleviate it, using the strengths life gives us.
So what does this God as love perspective mean for us practically?
Well, it suggests that inner silence and love can cultivate deep inner peace, harmony, order, insight, and that this inner state then flows outward into the world and returns to us almost like grace. It draws on figures like Jesus and Buddha, who both emphasize love as the highest vibration, the path to unity with the divine. And it asks this compelling question, wouldn't it be worth giving more space to love in our lives, especially in tough times?
This leads right into that idea of inner stillness and depth the author talks about.
Exactly. Once thoughts and those unconscious impulses quiet down, our consciousness naturally longs for that depth, that stillness. The author quotes Rumi, "I was a hidden treasure and longed to be known, so I created the world."
Beautiful.
And from that, the author suggests each person is a hidden treasure with a unique path laid out for discovery. By walking that path, we can start receiving vibrations from that stillness beyond our consciousness. We experience them as strength, bliss, peace, oneness, and allow them to flow into our thoughts, feelings, actions, even our outer reality. That state the author calls flow.
Which brings us to this fascinating concept, the matrix of consciousness.
Yeah, just like in the movie The Matrix, where people are unknowingly slaves to a machine creating an illusion. Our author suggests that society's collective thinking can act like that machine.
How so?
Well, the source gives examples. How quickly pandemic behaviors like masks or elbow bumps became normal, or how our prosperity might be built on destroying the environment without us fully facing it. The key to breaking free from these family and societal thought patterns, the author claims, is absolute concentration on the here and now.
So how do we play this game of life? How do we master this wild horse of our thinking, as the author puts it?
The author gives some fixed rules for the game, like one thing at a time. Every move is equally valuable and should be done as perfectly and relaxed as possible. No exaggerations.
Simple but hard.
Right. And there are bonus points for recognizing and multiplying harmony and beauty. Performing rituals, dancing, singing, greeting strangers, calling old friends, visiting grandma, planting flowers. Giving counts more than taking. Listening more than talking.
And what are the signs that you're actually getting good at this game? Becoming a master?
The text lists several powerful signs. An increase in your health, joy, love, harmony, strength. Finding yourself naturally dwelling more in the here and now. Stillness in your head. being fully open, present in whatever you're doing, radiating balance, joy, calm, confidence, empathy, starting to see challenges, even illness or setbacks, not as failures, but as chances to grow. And finally, receiving strength and intuition from deep within your consciousness, from life itself, to fulfill your unique purpose.
Now, this deep dive also gives us really specific, practical ways to apply these ideas through that fascia integration therapy, FIT. Let's start with identifying if we're stuck in a stress mode. How do we do that?
The author describes the integral stress test. First step is checking for pelvic torsion. That's basically an imbalance, a twist in the pelvis. Often shows up as tightness in specific hip and inner thigh muscles. A common pattern is, say, a short left hip flexor and tight right adductors, the inner thigh muscles.
Okay, and then there's the navel test.
That's right. The idea is that gently touching your navel should normally help resolve that pelvic twist. If it doesn't, it suggests what the author calls an overarching energetic interference field in your aura, a deeper blockage. The touch itself might even feel uncomfortable in that case. And after treatment, the navel often becomes a key spot for relaxation again.
How do we find those other interference fields that might be causing stress?
That's the interference field test. It involves simply touching areas like existing scars, your neck, your flank area, jaw, eyes. The principle is, if there's a stress state held in one of those regions, touching it should temporarily relax the pelvis. It's like you're briefly switching off its disruptive signal.
Interesting.
If touching doesn't relax the pelvis, again, it might point to a higher level energetic interference field.
Okay, so once we've maybe identified some of these areas, what's the core idea behind the integration treatment? How does it work?
The treatment really encourages cultivating that subtle feeling of warmth, the enjoyment of relaxation. Initial changes might be gentle. You don't always strongly feel the vegetative nervous system shifting, but the goal is to gently guide the body back towards balance.
Can you walk us through some of the main techniques the author mentions? What are they trying to achieve?
Sure. One key practice is navel integration. You place one hand on your stomach, gently push the navel with your middle finger in the direction that feels softest, the one that triggers a deep breath. Then you place your other hand on identified stress spots, especially the neck, because of the vagus nerve connection and the flanks near the adrenals, kidneys, back fascia. The aim is to calm the nervous system via these central points.
Okay, what else?
Then there's scar integration. You cover the whole scar with one hand while doing the navel integration with the other. Or more sustainably, the author suggests gently shifting the scar tissue itself in the direction that feels comfortable. Maybe a partner can help. And this applies to surface scars and deeper internal ones, like from a C-section. Those can apparently be addressed through focused imagination.
And the aura integration, that sounds quite different.
It does. For aura integration, you hold your open hands out in front of your stomach or neck, kind of like you're hugging a tree, a bit like a Qigong posture. Then you gently compress what the author calls your stress cloud a few times with your hands. The idea is you might feel a slight density in the air, maybe an uncomfortable sensation, maybe even a temporary increase in pain somewhere. After about 20 to 60 seconds, the theory is that the activated vibrations, the stored emotions, release through your open hands. The stress cloud shrinks. And you feel relaxation, sometimes even relief from related symptoms. For bigger trauma fields, they recommend an experienced therapist who might work from further away. The source claims this treatment consistently resolves that pelvic torsion and can release long-held emotions.
Wow. Anything else specific?
Lastly, it briefly mentions orthobiomic fascia integration. This focuses on specific areas like the eyes, jaw, the SI joint in the pelvis, pubic bone connection, the atlas vertebra at the top of the neck, and foot joints. These are seen as key stress points because they're functionally important or have strong vagal nerve connections. More detailed instructions for all these are in the author's book.
So what can someone realistically expect if they try these, and how often should they do them?
Well, initially, the changes might be subtle, but the goal is to feel more relaxed, more upright, more resilient over time. Your immune system, organs, nerves start to recover, vitality comes back. Releasing those trauma fields can apparently have a really strong positive impact.
Mm-hmm.
The author suggests if you don't have pelvic torsion initially, but you have a history of stress, like burnout, keep applying the techniques until torsion does show up and then resolves. In burnout, practice multiple times daily. Avoid extra stress. Nourish yourself with pleasant things.
So it's definitely a sustained process, not just a quick fix.
Exactly. Once the main interference zones are aggressed, daily relief might come from just doing the navel neck and navel flank integrations. Maybe after a quick aura release, you could do them after work, before bed, before meditation or exercise. But importantly, don't use it like doping. It reactivates your battery, yes, but that battery still needs proper recharging through rest.
Good point.
You might not see huge dramatic changes instantly, but you'll likely feel more aligned. Maybe less back pain, better grounding, freer breathing, a deep relaxation, like being really well rested. Others might notice, though, a changed aura, maybe a fresh sparkle in your eyes.
This deep dive has really given us such a profound, multi-layered view of health, stress, and how incredibly interconnected we are. From the subtle dance of our fascia to the deep impact of unconscious patterns, it really urges us to listen to our body's wisdom, to see the powerful role we play in our own well-being.
Yeah, we've seen how external challenges like the pandemic can really spotlight those deeper internal imbalances and societal ones too. And by embracing this kind of holistic view, learning to navigate these rules of life, you know, taming our thoughts, cultivating positive vibes, tending to our inner landscape, we can unlock some incredible resilience.
And the practical techniques mentioned, like the integral stress test, the integration therapies, they offer tangible ways to actually engage with this knowledge. It's such a powerful reminder that our bodies are constantly talking to us. Learning to really listen can be, well, transformative.
Absolutely. And stepping back, the deeper implication here is that by bringing awareness to our inner world, by working on our own balance, we're not just healing ourselves, we're contributing to a more harmonious collective, a healthier planet even.
So what does all of this mean for you listening right now? Maybe the most provocative thought to sit with is this. If our bodies, our thoughts, even the events playing out in the world around us are ultimately made of energy and information, and if our love, our inner stillness, can genuinely create ripples out there, then what untapped potential lies within your own matrix of consciousness just waiting for you to explore?